This is Arlene O'Reilly, your host of Nantucket Soundbites. I am so pleased to have with me today Dr. Regina Jorgensen, who is the new director of astronomy at the Mariah Mitchell Association. Dr. Jorgensen is also one of our new contributing journalists in Nantucket Sound Magazine. Welcome, Regina. It is a pleasure to finally meet you.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me.
So I understand you were born and raised in California.
Yes, that's right.
Okay, so I was born in California as well. But how did you come to Nantucket?
Yeah, so I first came to Nantucket with the summer research program that's run by the Mariah Mitchell Association for astronomy undergraduate students.
Okay.
And that's sponsored now. It's been running for many, many years.
Yeah.
But nowadays it's sponsored by the National Science Foundation through a program called Research Experience for Undergraduates. And every summer we get six undergraduates from around the country to come to the association and do research, basically astrophysical research.
Mm-hmm.
And so I came as one of those undergraduates. And that was my first.
How long ago was that?
That was in 97, the summer of 97. So I was still in my undergraduate years back then. And so that was my first exposure to Nantucket. And it was such a great summer. The then director of astronomy, Vladimir Strelinsky, was just a fantastic mentor, and he is a great astronomer, and he led all of us in a bunch of great research projects and, you know, had a great experience living on Nantucket. And it really, I think, reinvigorated my desire to go into astronomy as a research field and as a career.
Wow, how appropriate and suiting that is.
Yeah. So it was very foundational in my future, actually.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now I understand that you won a Thomas J. Watson Foundation Fellowship that supported you in a year-long adventure traveling around the world, investigating the effects of culture on science through the eyes of women astronomers. That sounds really interesting to me. So
that's right.
Tell me about that.
So one of the things that I got interested actually while I was here at Mariah Mitchell was the history of women in science.
Okay.
And sort of looking at the situation nowadays for women in science, and particularly in physics and astronomy. And there's this sort of interesting phenomenon where in other scientific fields like chemistry and biology, the numbers of women have been steadily increasing, and not so much in physics and astronomy. And so I got very interested in the question of why that is. And so I thought it might be interesting to look at the situation in different cultures around the world to try to see if we could get any insight into why that was actually happening. So I ended up developing this project and won the Watson Fellowship to do that. And so I was traveling around the world. I went to Europe, India, Australia, Japan, and Russia for the year.
Wow.
And so it was a fantastic year.
Was there a lot of similarities, or was there?
Sometimes, but it was interesting because looking in different cultures was very interesting. For example, in India, where there's a relatively higher percentage of women in physics and astronomy, it was sort of interesting to find out why that is. And I think in large part, there are cultural differences. For example, at the time, and I think even still now today in India, arranged marriage is very common.
Yeah.
And also there's no social security. So when you get old, who's going to take care of you? It's your kids, you know. So it's very important that everybody gets married and has children.
Insurance policy.
Exactly. Yeah. And so that's just such an accepted part of the culture. And how that leaks into physics and astronomy is that when you're a physicist or an astronomer and a woman, it's expected that you take off a year, say, to have a child, and then you'll come back into your same position and everything will be fine.
Okay.
Whereas if you talk to women in the West, that's frowned upon.
Yeah.
Like, how could you take off time? You must not be a serious scientist. And there's a lot of pressure to not have a sort of family life or not have children, or at least take time to do that. And then another thing in India, they still very much live in large extended families. So grandmas and grandpas, aunts and uncles all living together. And so there's a built-in childcare system that we really don't have anymore in the West, you know, where our family structure is very much just parents and children.
Yeah.
And so if both parents are working, you have to figure out childcare, and that can be expensive and difficult to arrange. So there were interesting subtleties like that that I came across.
It sounds like you could write a book on that.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. I'd be interested to read that. Speaking of writing, your editorial in the summer edition of Nantucket Sound Magazine gives our readers a review of recent discoveries in astronomy. So please tell our readers a little bit about water in the solar system, which that struck me by surprise when I read that.
Right. So. Yeah. So it turns out, actually, we now know, or we believe, that there's more water in other bodies in the solar system than even all of the water that we have here on Earth.
Wow.
And,
really?
Yeah. And why do we care? The reason we might care is because for life as we know it, liquid water is very important.
Of course.
And so you can't have life as we know it without liquid water. So if you're interested in questions like where did we come from and might there be life elsewhere in the solar system or in the universe, you want to look for these places that might have liquid water. And so now we pretty much have a good idea that there's liquid water several places other than Earth, one of them being Mars, which was a pretty recent discovery, particularly within this last year, with long-term monitoring of Mars. Several scientists were able to determine that it seems like there's liquid water on the surface right now. And that's a pretty big deal. We know there was probably liquid water in the past, and we know that there's ice. But actually seeing that liquid water firsthand, we think we have just now done within this past year. And that was in sort of these streams that we see coming down sort of canyons and whatnot on the side, on the surface of Mars. And we see the seasonal changes.
Wow.
When it's warmer, we actually can see the sort of signature of flowing water.
So the rhythm of it, of the planet's natural state or being.
Yeah. And then even more exciting, I think, are moons around Jupiter and Saturn. There's several different moons that we now think probably have subsurface oceans of water. So the crust of these moons is ice because it's quite cold out there. They're very far away from the sun. But for various reasons, mostly due to heating, what's called tidal heating, and that's heating due to the different gravitational pull on either side of the moon from the planet, either Saturn or Jupiter, that the moon is orbiting around, that actually creates enough heat that we believe there are liquid oceans of water underneath these ice crusts. And we see evidence of this liquid. And so those are really exciting potential future sites for exploration where we are working on sending probes to actually go look and see if we can detect possible signs of life there.
You're painting quite the pictures in my mind's eye right now.
Yeah, it's very exciting, actually.
Yeah, that it is. You know, I can tell you that I've been accused by close friends of being a geek because of my technical knowledge. And they also know that I love Star Trek, all versions, that is. I would love to hear more about the gravitational waves that you spoke about in your editorial.
Right. So that was a very exciting announcement a few months ago. In fact, I would say the biggest discovery within the last 100 years in the world of physics and astronomy was the announcement of the detection of gravitational waves.
Okay.
And I can't, it's hard for me to even describe how big of a discovery this is because it's like, it's opening up an entirely new discovery space.
Okay.
So everything that we know about the universe, we know because we've received electromagnetic radiation, which is light, microwaves, X-rays, all of that is the same phenomenon. It's electromagnetic radiation. And that's what we study as astronomers or as physicists. This gravitational waves are a completely different thing. So they are the actual bending of space-time due to the acceleration of mass of massive bodies. And it was something that was predicted by Einstein about 100 years ago.
It's amazing.
Yes, when he somehow had the great insight to come up with the theory of general relativity, which predicts the existence of these gravitational waves or the bending of space-time. And so what's so exciting about it is that we do know any mass that's accelerating will create gravitational wave.
Just the same way as a boat.
Exactly. You moving through, walking through, you know, walking down to the store creates gravitational waves. It's just that they're so tiny, we would never actually detect them.
Right.
And so in order to detect them, we need something that's very, very massive, like a supermassive black hole. And in this case, with this discovery, it was two supermassive black holes that were actually colliding. And they sent off a relatively large gravitational wave that this amazing experiment called LIGO was able to detect with these very, very sensitive detectors that they built, the most sensitive detector ever made. And so it's an astounding achievement. And as I sort of talk about it, was really something that has been in the works for the last 50 years. So this is a very long-term experiment that finally had these amazing results. And so it was very exciting.
It sounds exciting. I mean, I'm not, of course, I don't have anywhere near the knowledge that you do, but it sounds like we're learning so much more and we're going so much further with our knowledge.
Yeah.
But it is remarkable to me that someone predicted this,
you
know, Einstein, I believe, 100 years ago.
Really, we don't even know what else we might see. So we do know some things that we'll see. But what's exciting is it's because it's opening up this new discovery space. It's sort of anybody's guess as to what else we might learn now with these sort of new eyes that we have on the universe. So that's what's really exciting, I think.
Yeah. Oh, it is incredibly exciting. Well, I hope to come out to the Mariah Mitchell Observatory one night this summer. Can you tell us, like, is there any particular good time during the summer or anything happening in the heavens that maybe we should look for?
Well, any clear night with Nantucket, you never know with the weather. So
true,
I'd say any clear night is great. We're out there Monday, Wednesday, Fridays from 9 to 10:30. And now we just now start to have, we've had Jupiter up for a while, and now Mars and Saturn are going to be rising. And so pretty soon, in a week or two, you'll actually be able to see all three of the planets through our telescopes. So
really?
That's very exciting. So you can come and look at the planets. We also, of course, do constellation tours. And now we have all of our incoming new summer research interns. And so you'll be able to talk to them about sort of the research that they're doing or any questions that you might have about astronomy or astrophysics.
If I ask you, is there anything that you would like to share with us that I haven't asked you, would that be okay? Is there...
Good question.
He's like, I wanted to get the observatory in there.
Yeah.
You know, and I think it's, well, okay, how about this? I know that my personal experience in going to the observatory, you do need to dress, you know, warmly, and there's a little bit of a stairs to go up, but it's a wonderful experience for all ages, you know, very young to very mature, I would say.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's and you can really make it your own by actively asking questions. And, you know, our interns and myself and the other people who will be working there really like talking to people about whatever their questions are. So we love questions. So come with all of your questions that you might have. And dress warm. In the summer, it's of course warmer, but there's mosquitoes. So you might want to wear some long sleeves just to protect against the mosquitoes. It's a great time. So I would encourage everybody to come out.
So is anything else new happening at Mariah Mitchell this summer?
Well, right now we're really just gearing up. All of our interns are arriving right now. And so we are sort of gearing up for our summer research and training of the interns. One thing I'm looking forward to doing, we're trying to fundraise right now it won't probably happen this summer, but hopefully in the fall, we want to take the 24-inch telescope that we have at Loynes Observatory and make it such that we can do remote observing from there, so we don't actually have to be out there when we're doing our observations. Because it's sort of hard to spend all night out there. There's no facilities and not necessarily great heat. And so if you're going to stay the whole night out there, it's a little bit hard. So if we get...
It's a little more rustic.
It's a little more rustic, exactly. And so one of the things I'm trying to do right now is get in place a remote observing facility such that we could observe from our Vestal Street campus or anywhere that has an internet connection, basically.
Okay, that's pretty cool. So, I bet Mariah Mitchell herself would have liked that.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Regina, Nantucket is so lucky to have you here with us. And I know that you're a strong advocate for both women and science. Let me say that one more time. I know you're a strong advocate for both women in science and share Mariah's philosophy of learning by doing. And I look forward to hearing more about our universe from you. Is there anything that you would like to say in honoring of Mariah Mitchell herself? Because she was always a fascinating person to me. I know when I first came to Nantucket, and I find that it's very suiting yeah. to have you sort of at the helm now again at this point in time.
Yeah, so. Definitely. She is so inspiring to me continuously. I mean, from the time that I first came here until now, I still learn new things about her. Mm-hmm. And she was such a she had such foresight in her thinking and her ways of acting. You know, she was, as far as I know, really one of the first people to espouse the idea of learning by doing rather than lecturing. And if you look at our university system nowadays, that's how the university system is really going towards teaching by doing. So flipped classrooms where you don't have lecture, but you actually just learn by doing experiments and whatnot. And Mariah was doing that, you know, 150 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fantastic. It's such a great philosophy because it is really the best way of learning something is to just get thrown into doing it and experiencing the research side of things yourself. So, you know, just that small bit about her really inspires me all the time, besides the fact of just what a strong woman she was, you know, in the time that she lived. So,
if I may, I'm going to ask you to just read the quote that you wrote at the end of your article, because I think that's
definitely. It's funny, I had a little bit of trouble writing it because I wanted to edit it because she wrote it with he, and so I wanted to edit it to she. I didn't.
I hear you, girl.
So, she wrote, "The true scientist must be self-forgetting. She knows that under the best circumstances, she is sowing what others must reap, or rather, that she is striking the mind which others must open up. For human life, at longest, has not the measure of a single breath in the long life of science." And so I chose that quote because it really tied in with what I sort of tried to write about in astronomy in particular. A lot of our endeavors and a lot of our research are really long-term endeavors. So
it's like
nothing.
It's like building blocks.
Exactly.
Literally.
Nothing happens quickly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we have to always be thinking very far into the future, mm-hmm. what we want to explore and how we need to set up for it now, because these experiments take a lot of time and a lot of money and a lot mm-hmm. of investment of resources. And I think it's true with anything in life, really. That's, you know, mm-hmm. anything worthwhile, you have to invest a lot of effort into it.
And absolutely.
So that's absolutely true in science. And Mariah knew that as mm-hmm. well, you know, which is clear from her writings and her own.
And I also like that you mm-hmm. both are actually saying that you're really not, it's not about ego or being attached to
right.
the research itself and understanding that you're passing the torch to the next generation.
Right, exactly. It's about the exploration. Yeah. What are yes. the answers to these questions? And
right.
what other questions can we ask? And not so much what am I taking away from it? Or, you know,
right.
she was in fact very modest about her own achievements and mm-hmm. her own. She won this gold medal for discovering a telescopic comet. And I had heard she never showed it to anyone. She didn't really like, you know, she didn't like attention on herself.
Yeah.
You know, everybody's a little bit different. But I think that's the true spirit, really, of science is
yeah.
asking, you know, we're trying to ask these questions and find answers
Perfect.
To these questions.
Wow. So. Well, like I said before, our listeners can get more information on mariahmitchell.org. And Regina, we're really psyched that you're now a part of our community, and I hope you
Thanks.
Have a wonderful summer.
Thanks so much.
And I wish you all the best of luck in all of your research and all of that.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
Okay. Well, you've been listening to Nantucket Soundbites, an auditory extension of Arts Nantucket and Nantucket Sound Magazine. Please download our free app called Nantucket Digital Publishing to subscribe to us. Our magazines in print are out and can be found around the island. Give us a thumbs up in social media. Thanks for listening. This is Arlene O'Reilly. Tune in again with me next week.